Is that, is it not? Yeah.
Mm.
à Leclerc. Welcome to this lecture, NIS lecture, and to Dr. Marie Mo, the lecturer and a research scientist at SINTEF in Trondheim and associate professor too here at Gjøvik NTNU, the NIS lab. Dr. Mo, she has a master's degree in mathematics. I'm sorry, I have to wait for them. Dr. Mo, I start again. She has a master's degree in mathematics and a PhD in information security from NTNU. And she has experience as a team leader at NorthCert. And as part of her position here at NTNU Gjøvik, she teaches a class on incident management and preparedness planning. Marie is also a member of the global grassroots organization IM Cavalry, an organization that focuses on issues where computers security interconnects public security and human life. And in the lecture, she will present her personal story related to the issue and e-health security more in general. And she will make us aware that our dependence on technology has grown faster than our ability to defend it. She will make you see that the Internet of Things is not only things, but highly complex socio-material relationships. She will make you see that healthcare work is high-tech work and that nurses and doctors are machine body tenders. And clearly, e-health security is a cross-disciplinary research field, and cybersecurity in medical devices have just started to be an issue in health authorities nationally and internationally, and hardly an issue in healthcare, education and practice. And therefore, as head of research at Center for Care Research here at NTNU in Gjøvik, I'm delighted to be invited to moderate this lecture and to introduce Dr. Mo. Complex, software-driven, connected technologies are being used in every facet of modern healthcare. And the center is looking forward to work more with you and the NIS lab on this issue.
Do you hear me? Okay, yeah. So I'm a researcher and also I teach class here. So this is actually the same classroom as I used for my teaching. And I see a couple of my students here in the audience. Thank you for coming. So I work I'm a security researcher. I work with information security, but I'm also a patient. Some doctors and medical device vendor might even call me a difficult patient because I ask difficult questions. I ask questions that they're not used to patients being that informed on. I'm very happy to be here today, and I'll give you a very personal presentation today. It's a presentation about how it is to be living with a vulnerable implanted device. I have a pacemaker inside my body, which is generating every single beat of my heart. So I am totally dependent on this pacemaker. And how can I trust my heart when my heart is running on proprietary code and there's no transparency? I don't know how this code works. If it does security properly, does it even use encryption? So when I got my implanted device a little bit more than 4 years ago, I was already working on information security. I was working on incident response at the time at the NorthCert, the National Computer Emergency Response Team, and I was dealing with the security incidents. And of course, when I got my implant, I was starting to have questions about how secure is it. So this is my story and my motivation for this research. So 4 years ago, or a little bit more than 4 years ago, I just found myself lying on the floor. I can't remember how I got there. It turned out that it was my heart that had taken a small pause, enough to cause unconsciousness. You can't really survive long without a heartbeat. It's like 10 seconds and then you pass out. So that was what happened to me. I went to the emergency room and I didn't really suspect that there was something wrong with my heart. I just went there because I had a headache and I had hit my head when I fell to the floor. And then they hooked me up to ECG and they saw that I had a very irregular heart rhythm. So my heart was beating too slow. I was admitted to the hospital in the intensive care unit for 1 week. And then they decided that I needed to have a pacemaker to stay alive because my heart was starting to beat slower and slower. And they had to give me adrenaline to keep it running. And I was down to 30, 40 beats per minute. So that's my story. So I got this device implanted, and that should be the solution. But it turns out you need to also configure this device to make it work properly with your body. So a couple of weeks after my surgery, I recovered quickly. I didn't do any like exercise or sport yet, but I went to London to participate in a course on ethical hacking. I think it was like 4 weeks after the procedure. And I went with my colleagues in the London Underground, and we went off at the station at Covent Garden, and it had a really, really long staircase. I don't know if anyone of you have been there before, but in the underground there are some stations where you have to really climb the stairs. Of course, there's an elevator, but there was a long queue to the elevator. So my colleagues were just going for the stairs, and I followed them. And I didn't read this sign. I don't know if you can see it, but it says that this stair should only be used in emergency. And it's 193 steps to climb, equal to a 15-story building. And please don't use if you have heart conditions. So obviously I disregarded this sign. I was quite fit before. I had my episode where my heart started to beat much slower than it should. I had been running and doing sports, and I felt quite fit. And I started climbing the stairs, and then halfway through the stairs, I just couldn't make it anymore. It was like hitting the wall. Like if you're running a marathon, and you come to a certain point where you can't really go on much longer. You just have to quit. So I was halfway up the stairs when I got this feeling, which was horrible. I felt like an 80-year-old, and I didn't know what had happened. I had to continue up the stairs, but it was really, really a struggle. But then when I came up the stairs, I recovered again, and my heart started to beat more normally, and I felt okay. But of course, I went directly after this trip to see my doctors at the hospital, and I complained that I had this feeling that I just couldn't go on anymore, and it must be something wrong with my heart. And it turned out it was a month later until they resolved this issue. I had this horrible experience several times later as well. Once was when I was running after the bus, and I suddenly couldn't keep on running, and it was a terrible feeling. What actually happened was that there's some settings in the pacemakers that cut your pulse in half when you reach a certain limit. And this was set to a heart rate limit that was 160 beats per minute for me. And as a relatively young person, this was way too low for me. It can be suitable for an 80-year-old, which is the typical patient that receives a pacemaker. But for me, it was not really working. And I didn't really figure this out because there was an issue with the programming device of my pacemaker. I'll tell you a little bit more about that later in the talk. But first, I want to educate you a little bit on how the heart works in case you don't remember your biology lessons or not an expert on how the heart works.
A normal heartbeat rate and rhythm is called normal sinus rhythm. The heart's pumping action is driven by electrical stimulation within the heart muscle. The heart's electrical system allows it to beat in an organized, synchronized pattern. Every normal heartbeat has four steps. Step 1. As blood flows into the heart, an electrical impulse from an upper area of the right atrium, also known as the sinus node, causes the atria to contract. When the atria contract, they squeeze the blood into the ventricles. Step 3. There is a very short pause, only about a fraction of a second. And step 4. The ventricles contract, pumping the blood to the body. A heart normally beats between 60 to 100 times per minute. Electrical signals in your heart can become blocked or irregular, causing a disruption in your heart's normal rhythm. When the heart's rhythm is too fast, too slow, or out of order, an arrhythmia, also called a rhythm disorder, occurs. When your heart beats out of rhythm, it may not deliver enough blood to your body. Rhythm disorders can be caused by a number of factors, including disease, heredity, medications, or other factors.
So this is my problem, is that my heart was starting to beat irregularly and not giving me enough oxygen. So it's the problem with the electrical system of the heart. So the heart works, or the way the heart contracts is that it gets an electrical signal which originates in the sinus node, and this signal travels down the heart through the AV node and reaches the ventricle, so that you get a small delay between the contractions, so that the upper part of the heart beats a little bit before the lower part of the heart. So in my case, there was a blocking of the signals, so they didn't travel all the way down. They were stopped at the AV node. But luckily, if the ventricles don't get their electrical signal, there's a backup solution. There are some cells in the ventricle that can take over the functionality of creating the pulse. So there are some pacemaker cells there that will cause the ventricles to contract. But the problem is that when you have this blocking of the signal, you will get a problem with the rhythm, because these other cells that take over the functions, they are not that well regulated. They don't respond to your physical needs in the same way. So that if you, for instance, try to exercise, these cells won't take that signal and they won't give you a higher pulse. So that's why I had this problem of getting very low pulse, around 30, 40 minutes, beats per minute. And in my case, when I get the pacemaker, the pacemaker works so that it has one electrical wire that is connected to the upper part of the heart, and that wire is just listening for the beat from the sinus node. And then there's a second wire that is attached to the lower part of the heart that will in sync with what the first wire is sensing, it will create a small electrical signal so that my ventricle will contract in the right rhythm. So that's the simple working of a pacemaker. But I also have a video explaining that for you. So let's see if it works.
A pacemaker is a miniaturized computer that is used to treat a slow heartbeat. It is about the size of a couple of stacked silver dollars and weighs approximately 17 to 25 grams. It is usually surgically placed or implanted just under the skin in the chest area. The device sends a tiny electrical pulse down a thin coated wire called a lead into your heart. This stimulates the heart to beat. These impulses are very tiny, and most people do not feel them. While the device helps your heart maintain its rhythm, it also stores information about your heart that can be retrieved by your doctor to program the device.
So So did you notice the ones and zeros at the end? So there's actually a lot of data being collected by the pacemaker, and this is what I'm going to focus on today. There are also other versions of this pacemaker. There are progress being made technologically. So the weakest link or the weakest point of a pacemaker, the part that can fail in most cases, are the leads. Research has been done to produce a smaller pacemaker that can be implanted directly into the heart so that you don't need the wires or the leads. So this is an example of a leadless pacemaker. And they have come also on the market, but they cannot be used to treat my condition. There are also other types of pacemakers or implanted cardiac devices that work a little bit differently, but that can actually administer a shock in case your heart stops. So these are used to treat other types of conditions than the one I have. They are usually referred to as ICDs, but they work in much the same way. But in the future, I think that I don't know if anyone else in this room has an implanted device, but I think that more and more of us will have implanted devices in the future. And we can benefit greatly from this. We can live longer lives, and we can have better lives by being helped by different types of medical sensors and medical equipment. And this is an example of ongoing research. This is actually a 3D printed cardiac sock. So these sensors are put outside outside of the heart in this case. It's like a spider web network of sensors and electrodes, and this can actually keep a heart alive outside of the body. So this is an example where they have used a rabbit's heart and taking it out of the rabbit, and it still works because of these sensors. And this is just one example of what we might have in the future. We might have tiny, tiny sensors put in our body to treat different conditions. So even if you don't depend on the medical device today, you might know someone that depends on them, and you might even depend on them in the future. So my topic today is something concerning all of you. And are we trusting these machines that we will then become more and more dependent upon? Would you trust this machine? I don't know if you've seen this movie, but this is Eva. She's played by the Swedish actor Alicia Amanda Vikander. This is from the film Ex Machina. I'm not going to spoil the film in case you haven't seen it, but at least I feel a little bit uncertain about trusting machines when I think about the different types of science fiction plots in the future. And these devices are getting connected more and more. So they used to be like isolated systems, not really network enabled, but today everything is being more and more connected. There's an internet of medical things. And I discovered that I'm actually part of this internet of medical things. And I was not informed about this when I had my device. So this is really surprising to me. So after I got the device, I of course started to search for information about it. So I Googled for it. And I found the technical manual of my particular pacemaker. And I read it, and I discovered that my pacemaker actually has two wireless interfaces. I only knew about one of them, which was the interface that they used to program the device when they set it up and configure it. But it turns out that there are actually two wireless interfaces. So this is my device, and you can talk to it when you configure it via this programmer. And that's by inductive near field communication. So you actually have a reader that you place outside of the body, very close to the device, and it will only communicate in a couple of centimeters distance. And this is the interface that is being used to change the settings of my pacemaker. But then there's another one. It's the remote monitoring interface, which I was not aware of. In my case, it's not switched on. But for a lot of patients, this is very beneficial because they need to have more frequent checkups than I do. And if you have remote monitoring switched on, you can have like daily reports being logged in your device and then transmitted via the internet or via some telecommunication systems to a server on the internet, and then your healthcare provider can log on to a portal and retrieve your log information. And for a lot of patients, this is really something that they for them it's very beneficial because they can have a closer follow-up and they don't have to go that frequently to the doctor's office or to the hospital to get checkups. And of course, it's also cost-saving for the society. But for me as a security researcher, this remote monitoring feature, it opens up the attack surface, and it makes me potentially connected into this medical Internet of Things. So I feel that I should have been told this before I got the device, and that I should have had to consent to have these wireless interfaces in my body, but there is no such thing. And the next time when I will get a new device, because the battery lasts around 10 years, so I still have like 5-6 years left on the battery, I will have to have a replacement. I will do my research, and I will be a really, really difficult patient when it comes to interfering into deciding what kind of device I want to have. So I actually started a research project because I could not find any information on how the security was implemented in the system. These are proprietary devices, and I couldn't find the protocols used and so on. So I actually went shopping on eBay. I bought a programmer. I also bought several of these home monitoring units, and I also obtained pacemakers, because of course I'm not doing this research on my own pacemaker device. That would not really be ethical. And I got some help from some volunteers that helped me with starting to do research on this. And now recently I also got some funding, internal funding from SINTEF, to start a small research project on looking into how the wireless communication of these devices is secured. Because with connectivity comes vulnerability. So there's a lot of things that can go wrong here. Of course, I want to know, is my device vulnerable? Maybe the access point is vulnerable. There could also be like insider threats in a mobile network. So I want to know if my patient information is properly secured on the way. Is it encrypted when it's leaving my device and going into this patient record systems? And the server, which is at the vendor site, could be some potential vulnerabilities there as well. And of course, we have all the possibilities of human errors. So there's a lot of things that can go wrong. And the impact can be really, really devastating. We can have patient privacy issues. I already sort of encountered that when I bought this programming equipment on eBay. It came with the patient information on it. So when I switched it on, I could see a list of all the patients that had been using this device previously. So we have a kind of decommissioning problem in the ecosystem life cycle of these devices. So when they are no longer used, what happens with them? You could have like battery exhaustion attacks, which can be really bad because I don't want to have to go through surgery more often than necessary. And if someone sets up some malicious equipment trying to connect to my device all the time, they could deplete the battery faster. Of course, it's possible also via these interfaces to make to turn the device off or make it malfunction in different ways. Recently, we have seen a lot of ransomware and also hospitals being hit with ransomware. What if someone hacks a lot of life-saving medical equipment and then starting to ask for money?